Okay, have you ever thought about what happens when someone commits a crime but they totally believe they were in the right? But only because their reality is, so messed up from mental illness.
Oh, yeah.
What if you thought aliens were invading and you had to stop them? So you do something that would normally be a crime, you know?
Right.
Well, that's what we're getting into today. With this case, Clark v. Arizona, it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And it's all about where mental illness and the law and criminal intent kind of all crash together.
It's a wild one. It really makes you think about how much weight we give mental illness in legal stuff. So this case, right, 2000, Eric Clark, this teenager with paranoid schizophrenia,
Okay.
shoots and kills a police officer.
Wow.
He admitted to doing it, but said his mental illness, he said it kept him from like really meaning to do it, you know, didn't have the right intent for first degree murder.
So, from the start, it's a total tragedy and a super complicated legal question, right?
Oh, for sure.
And to make it even more complex, Arizona, they had this weird law.
Yeah.
It's called the Mott Rule. And it really changed how Clark's lawyers could use evidence about his, mental illness.
Yeah, the Mott Rule is you kind of need to understand it to get this whole case. So basically, it said that evidence about mental illness, you could only use it for an insanity plea, not to argue that the defendant didn't have like the specific intent for the crime.
So even if his lawyers could prove that his schizophrenia made him think he was fighting aliens,
Yeah.
they couldn't use that to say he didn't mean to kill the officer.
Yeah,
It doesn't seem right.
that's the thing. It's a pretty huge restriction, and that's why it went to the Supreme Court, right?
Right.
Clark's lawyer said that restriction like messed with his right to due process, basically that he couldn't defend himself, right? Because Arizona was limiting this mental illness evidence so much.
So there's got to be some legal nuance here. Can you break down what the Supreme Court had to think about with this case?
Yeah.
It seems like there's a difference between saying someone is legally insane and saying they didn't have the mental capacity to form the intent for a specific crime.
You're totally right. It's not just is someone mentally ill. It's about how did that illness maybe change their actions? And like specifically their mens rea, that's the legal term for a guilty mind or intending to commit a crime.
Okay, mens rea, got it. So, say I thought I was making cookies, but I accidentally put salt in instead of sugar.
Okay.
I still baked, right?
Right.
But what I meant to do was different. So could mental illness sometimes be kind of like that mistake with intent?
That's a great way to think about it. And that's what Clark's lawyers were trying to do. They wanted to use the stuff about his schizophrenia to show his mental state. It kept him from forming the intent for murder, right? Even if he knew, like right from wrong in general. But the Mott Rule blocked them from using that evidence.
So Arizona's basically like, look, we get that mental illness exists, but we're going to draw a line in the sand on how you can use that info in court.
Exactly.
And then the Supreme Court had to figure out, was that line constitutional or not?
Yep.
So to do that, they had to get into all these different types of evidence about mental illness and how they were used in Clark's case, right?
Yeah.
This feels like it would be so confusing for a jury.
It can be.
How do you even separate out someone's mental state? Especially with something as complex as schizophrenia.
You're right. It's tough. It's not always clear cut. The court had to like figure out the difference between, observation evidence, mental disease evidence, and capacity
Oh,
evidence.
okay, so break those down for me.
All right, so observation evidence is basically stuff anyone would notice about someone's behavior. Did they seem agitated? Were they saying weird stuff? That kind of thing. Mental disease evidence is more about an official diagnosis.
Okay.
So, like, does this person have schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, whatever? You usually need an expert to talk about that. And capacity evidence. That's the trickiest one. That gets into could someone actually form the intent to commit a specific crime because of their mental illness?
Gotcha. So with Clark, someone might say they saw him acting strange before the shooting. That's observation, right?
Right.
And then a psychiatrist would say he has schizophrenia. That's mental disease evidence.
Right.
But then what about evidence that connects his specific delusions to the shooting? Like if he thought the officer was an alien.
Yeah, that's where the Mott Rule comes in.
Okay.
Arizona said you could use observation evidence when arguing about, you know, mens rea, that intent to commit the crime, but mental disease evidence and capacity evidence, those were off limits for intent. They could only
Okay.
be used for the insanity defense.
So they're saying we'll let you use mental illness to say someone is legally insane, but not to argue that they didn't have the specific intent for the crime.
Exactly.
Seems like a big difference.
It is. And that difference is what the Supreme Court had to decide. Did Arizona go too far limiting how mental illness evidence could be used? Or was this okay to manage how court works and keep juries from being confused with all this complicated psych stuff?
So tell me, how did the Supreme Court end up ruling on this? Did they agree with Arizona's approach? Or did they think it messed with Clark's right to a fair trial?
Well, it wasn't a simple decision. It got a lot of people talking about how we deal with mental illness in the legal system. And it was a close one. But in the end, a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court upheld Arizona's insanity test of the Mott rule.
Right. So they're saying it's okay for states to like limit how mental illness evidence can be used,
yeah,
even when it's directly related to the defendant's intent.
Yep, that's what they said. Justice Sutter wrote the majority opinion. He said that states, they have a lot of flexibility, right? They can define insanity and make rules about how evidence gets used in court. And he focused on keeping things clear for the jury. Said Arizona standard for insanity, yeah, it's narrow. It's that whole right versus wrong thing, but it's still constitutional.
But doesn't that make it way harder for someone like Eric Clark to, you know, really defend himself? Like, his mental illness was severe. If he really believed he was in danger because of his delusions, shouldn't the jury be able to consider that when they're deciding, you know, did he actually intend to kill the officer?
That's exactly what the dissenting justices were saying.
Yeah.
That's where it gets really interesting, actually. Justice Kennedy, in his dissent, he was pretty strong about it. He said that not allowing expert testimony, you know, about how Clark's delusions might have affected what he saw, like how he saw the victim, that basically changes the meaning of mens rea and messes with his right to a fair trial.
So Justice Kennedy's saying you can't just ignore the intent question by saying, well, overall, he knew right from wrong. So obviously he meant to kill the officer.
Exactly. He thought the majority opinion, it set up a standard that doesn't work. It could lead to people being convicted who shouldn't be, especially in cases with mental illness.
Right.
And Justice Breyer, he agreed that, yeah, there should be some structure to how evidence gets presented. But he was also worried about, like, how lower courts might actually use these distinctions in real cases, especially that line between observation evidence and mental disease evidence.
Okay, can you remind me, what's the difference between those two types again? I can see how it could get muddy in a case like this.
Sure. So observation evidence is anything a normal person would pick up on about how someone's acting. Are they talking to themselves? Are they agitated? That sort of thing. Mental disease evidence, that needs a real diagnosis, usually from a, you know, professional, a psychiatrist.
Okay, got it. So if witness heard Clark talking about aliens before the shooting, that'd be observation. But if an expert said that believing in aliens was part of his schizophrenia, that's mental disease evidence.
Right, exactly. And Justice Breyer's point was these lines could get blurred, especially when someone's delusions are directly affecting how they see things. What if Clark, because of his delusions, literally saw the officer as an alien threat? Would that be observation evidence?
Because
someone heard him saying that. Or mental disease evidence, because it came from his schizophrenia.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good point.
Right. It's a tough one.
That could cause some serious problems in court, maybe even lead to unfair results if courts are too strict about those categories.
Yeah. And Justice Breyer really emphasized that courts got to be super careful. When they're making these distinctions, they have to be sure they're not messing with the defendant's right to due process.
So it sounds like the dissenting justices were really worried about miscarriages of justice, basically convicting people who maybe weren't fully in control of what they were doing because of their mental illness.
Yeah, that's one of the big takeaways from those dissenting opinions. They felt like the majority, they were so focused on letting states do their own thing and keeping the process efficient that they overlooked how complex mental illness really is and how much it can affect someone's responsibility for a crime.
It seems like there's this constant push and pull in the law between holding people accountable for what they do, but also understanding that sometimes mental illness can really mess with a person's judgment.
It's a tough balance for sure. And Clark v. Arizona didn't solve it. It actually just showed how tricky it can be to juggle those individual rights, public safety, and, you know, the reality of mental illness, all in our legal system.
So where do we go from here? Did Clark v. Arizona change how other states deal with mental illness in criminal cases?
It definitely had an impact, but it didn't lead to, like, everyone doing things the same way. We'll get into how this case changed things in the next part of our deep dive.
So we've talked a lot about Clark v. Arizona, all the legal stuff, the Supreme Court's decision. But I'm thinking about, you know, the big picture. What happened after this? Did it change how other states handle mental illness in these kinds of cases?
It definitely did. Mm. But it didn't create like one set way for everyone to do things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Basically, it reinforced the idea that states can decide a lot of this stuff themselves, how they define insanity, what rules they have for mental illness evidence in court.
So it's less of a national standard, more like each state's doing their own thing.
Yeah, kind of like a patchwork.
Interesting.
Some states, maybe thinking about those concerns from the Clark case, they went for a broader insanity defense, you know, allowing mental illness evidence to be considered more when figuring out a defendant's intent.
Okay.
But then others, like Arizona, they stuck with their narrow definitions, that right from wrong thing, and kept those limits on how you can use mental illness evidence.
But wouldn't that lead to inconsistencies? Like maybe even unfair results? Think about it. Two people, same mental illness, commit similar crimes, but in different states.
Right.
One might be found insane, the other gets convicted because their state's definition is different, or they restrict the evidence. Doesn't seem quite right.
That's one of the biggest criticisms of the Clark decision. It creates this system where, yeah, your fate could depend on where you are, not the facts of the case or how bad your mental illness is.
It also seems like it puts a ton of pressure on juries, right? They're the ones who got to decide. Based on all this complicated, sometimes contradictory information, whether someone's mental illness really played a role in what they did.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge responsibility. They're making these really tough judgments about someone's mental state, trying to weigh the legal standards against, you know, how mental illness actually works, which is messy. And let's be real, not everyone understands mental illness. There's still so much stigma.
Right.
That could absolutely affect how jurors see the evidence.
It's not just the law. It's also how society views mental illness and how that impacts what happens in court. If someone thinks mental illness is just an excuse or that people should be responsible no matter what, well, that's going to affect their judgment as a juror, you know?
Absolutely. The law and society, they're connected. How we see and treat mental illness, that shapes how it's handled in the legal system.
Going back to Eric Clark's case, it makes me wonder, what if Arizona didn't have that Mott rule? Could things have been different? If the jury had heard more about how his schizophrenia changed how he saw things, would they have reached a different verdict?
It's hard to say for sure. Maybe they would have decided he didn't have that specific intent for murder. Or maybe they reached the same verdict even with more info. We can't go back in time and run the trial again with different rules.
Yeah, it's a real what if.
Yeah.
But that's what makes these cases so interesting. They make us think about how complicated mental illness is, the limitations of the law, and that challenge of balancing rights and safety.
Well said. Clark v. Arizona didn't give us easy answers. It showed us these big tensions, these questions we haven't figured out yet, where law, mental health, and, you know, who's responsible for a crime, where all that comes together.
I think what I'm taking away from this is there are no easy answers with these issues. You're talking about people's lives, complex mental states, and this legal system that's always trying to catch up.
It's true. And that's why these conversations are so important. We need to keep pushing for a system that's more thoughtful, more humane about mental illness. Clark v. Arizona reminds us that the law isn't fixed. It changes. It's a back and forth, trying to find balance between all these different things we care about.
This case has definitely given me a lot to think about. And I bet our listeners feel the same. Not exactly a light conversation, huh?
Nope. But that's kind of the point, right? It's good to dive into these tough topics, to think about different sides, come away with a better understanding, even if there's not one perfect answer.
So if you want to learn even more, check out the full Clark v. Arizona decision. Really interesting read. We'll link to it in the show notes.
And keep exploring mental health and the law. There's still so much to do. We need to make sure things are fair, compassionate, and that we really get how mental illness affects people, individuals, and all of society.
Keep thinking critically out there, folks, and don't be afraid to go deep. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive on Clark v. Arizona. See you next time.